Good evening.
Good evening.
Good to see you all. Can we go around and introduce ourselves, please?
Wendy.
Diane.
Marie.
Leslie.
Nico.
Yeah.
Ron.
Jeffrey.
Ross.
Judy.
John. The paramitas are the six perfections that Shakyamuni Buddha gave to the Sangha, gave to our lineage many, many centuries ago in response to a question put to him by a disciple. And the disciple wanted to know how this practice could be perfected. And he gave these six, generosity, precepts, patience, effort, meditation, and prajna, as the perfection of our practice. So we have the Eightfold Path, and we have the six paramitas. Paramita is a Sanskrit word, and it's two components. Para means across or other, and mita means short. So it's the vehicle to take Bodhisattva across the great river of samsara to the other shore. The purpose of the paramitas is to point the way, point to the other shore. The purpose is to keep the paramita, the Bodhisattva's direction fixed. And these six were thought to be the way to do that. Usually generosity is presented first. Generosity engenders positive feelings in the giver and usually in the receiver. And those positive feelings can flow through the other paramitas and loosen them up, so to speak, and let the Dharma light flow through. Generosity is a spectacular paramita for the effect that it has on us and others in opening us up and helping us realize that we can be generous. Generous with what's needed. Not with what a person wants necessarily, but what's needed. It's sometimes not so easy to determine that. But it could be funds, it could be food, it could be clothing, it could be shelter. It all depends on the situation. The second one, precepts, has a significant depth to it. But there again, all these should be started out with application to ourselves. The generosity, all of this. See how it feels. And with respect to precepts, maybe loosen up a little bit on those precepts and allow us some room and apply generosity to ourselves as well. All these, just open them up and apply them so that we can apply them as needed to others. The precepts, the morality, is fairly detailed. Five precepts of the ten. And some people kind of study those, you know, like a Westerner would, pick out the most important one that they have difficulty with and focus on that. But we don't really do that. These precepts came out of our practice 2,500 years ago. They were having difficulty in the Sangha. What to do about this and what to do about that. And the elders got together and they came up with a first set of precepts. And those were modified based on the experience they had and so on. So what we have today is the last iteration, and I think it's still being worked out. Maybe it's not a bad idea for us to rewrite the precepts for our needs, not to escape them, but to make them more appropriate. But the precepts aren't studied that way, I don't believe, best. They came out of the practice, and they should be practice directed in the practice. And just sit, just do the practice. Kinhin, illustrations, do the practice. But over time, you'll notice those precepts are inculcated. They're just absorbed somehow. I've seen this personally. So, patience is the third, and I think it's fairly straightforward. Patience is. Bodhisattvas are often thought to have timeless patience as compared to normal people. Have a lot of time to spend on important tasks, like assisting people. And that may be true. I don't know. That may be true. But effort is the fourth, and we had right effort in the Eightfold Path, and here it is again. This effort is again directed on us, what we need in the practice, and right effort with others. And all these are right efforts are based on the integration of the paramitas. These are an organic whole. They work together to support each other. So patience gets assistance from meditation and samadhi, and prajna. Prajna comes out of the practice itself. We cultivate prajna by sitting, walking, generosity. So they're kind of circular. You could draw the six in a circular pattern. Benefit from that also. But right effort is with a clear mind, samadhi, the mind that sees, truly sees, and doesn't move, sees what is, very simple, what's in front of us, like blue sky is blue sky. And the mind is like a mirror. It reflects back blue sky. So that kind of samadhi helps right effort, helps effort, helps patience, helps generosity. And the last one is prajna, wisdom. And that may be one of the more important ones. We have a sutra to it. It's the wisdom beyond wisdom. It's the wisdom that comes out of the practice that we really need. And it is given, it's freely given to us. It flows out of the practice. That intuitive understanding of what's going on. The bodhisattva sees this and sees that. What does it mean? Well, prajna helps that. We have intuitions, and we can trust our experience. And our practice really is about our experience. What we think, what we say, what we do, how we act. And we can digest those experiences and develop our practice. So it's all circular. The practice produces experience, and we digest it. And get different perspectives on all these six paramitas, and so on. But the real test of the paramita is in the application. How it's applied, where it's applied, in what cases, for whom. We have one lodestar here. That's the precepts. That's kind of a north star. But the north star isn't a direct route to north. It usually is very circuitous. It is what it is. And we travel that path because that's our path. And we can't travel somebody else's path. We can travel our own. I don't think I'll leave it there. We can open up for questions. I think that'll be more illustrative of the Paramitas.
I have a question about the this is gonna sound too practical, but like what you do with the paramitas, you know, like the precepts you can say I'm going to study one or observe it, or you know, it's sort of a, it's not a rule, right? But it's a guideline, you know, that you want to live your life by. But I guess I'm not sure, like how one works with the paramitas. Is there a comparable way to work with it?
Well, they come out definitely in the Bodhisattva vow that we take almost every time we meet as a sangha. We vow to save all beings. And this is the perfection of that path, to be able to open our hearts and be generous with teachings, with funds, with food, with shelter, whatever it is needed. To be patient, to apply ourselves with effort in a situation where we're needed. Bodhisattva is needed. Bodhisattva action of compassion is needed. And samadhi is one of the means of accomplishing this, by keeping a clear mind. A mind that just sees as is, without being deflected into other avenues that don't matter. Does that answer your question?
So I guess it's maybe a different focus than the precepts.
The precepts are pretty focused on morality.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And the paramitas are, of course, they have the precepts in them.
Right.
So they sort of supersede precepts. They're embedded at a higher level there, because they're not meant to be pure or impure. They're meant to be kept or not kept. A bodhisattva can make his or her own rules upon those. If he has a clear mind, or she has a clear mind, to trust her experience, that's trust our own experience.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even experiencing the moment with someone.
Are the paramitas, could they be like characteristics?
That's
you mentioned generosity,
yeah,
and patience,
yeah,
and those are all,
yeah,
kind of characteristics of,
yeah,
being.
Yes. I think it's appropriate. I think it's appropriate even with samadhi. That's our practice.
Mm-hmm.
We sit. We have an image coming in, image leaving. Another one comes in. It's a clear mind. We just sit, observe. The awareness of the no-watcher. So I think you could say they were characteristics. But I wouldn't say they're characteristics of an ego person grasping, wanting to accomplish something. I want to be more patient, and just, you know, not like that. With an open heart, open grasp, looser patience, patience with ourselves. We can apply it to ourselves, we can apply it to others. I think the situation is better. I think they're related.
I'm sorry, John. I'm having a little trouble hearing. My ears are not as sharp as they used to be. And so my question has to do with whether or not I heard you correctly.
Yes.
Did you say that we don't study the precepts?
I did say that, yeah. Cohen never once talked in the 23 years I was there. You never once talked about the precepts.
Cohen never once talked about the precepts.
You took the precepts. I took them at priest ordination in 1988. And, yeah.
So the we is our, we are the students of Cohen.
We're in Cohen's line.
Yeah.
Angie is his main disciple. Disciple of Angie's.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
I say Angie is his transmitted heir, and
right.
Yeah, I know.
But the broader we, with Soto Zen,
mm-hmm.
sometimes some teachers study the precepts.
I'm sure they do. We have not.
I just wanted to be sure.
We've studied them here before because in, for the book that we're preparing, we went back to 2009, and I think Angie sometimes will study them before somebody has a Jukai.
Yes.
So in 2009 we did them, in 2013, and we're actually preparing a chapter for the book on the precepts. So we're, you know, transcribing those talks. So I know we've studied them before. So. And I think we even did, we would like take one home and, you know, work with it for a week and then come back and report out.
Isn't it true that there's a ceremony? Taking the precepts at some point of one's at least semi-formal initiation into the Dharma.
With Jukai, you take the small
right.
precepts, and priests take the larger one.
I actually have not gone through that, but you know, I muddle through nonetheless.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can take them, but then. Like you said, you know, you have to sort of actualize them in terms of your own practice. Otherwise, they're just words, you know.
Yeah, you have to absorb them on your own. Work with them completely on your own experience, your own problems.
I have a long ways to go, but you know, I'm doing my best. I think that can be said of most of it. Perfect,
yeah. Well, I think that's why it isn't so much focused on that people are doing their best, and there's no need to encourage that further. Struggling with it is good because you get experience with it, see where it applies and when it doesn't apply,
mm-hmm.
and then you know when to break it. Someone comes in a store with a weapon and they want to know where the manager is. They want the keys to the safe or they want to hurt him. And you're working there and maybe you don't tell them where the manager is. You know, but you don't tell them. It's a lie. So you break the precepts to keep the karma from flowing against that the gun person and to keep the manager safe. So I like that. You've got to take a big picture with the precepts. It isn't black and white.
Given how central this idea of the precepts is to so much of our consideration of Buddhist practice and so on, how is it possible that Koban never once mentioned them? It seems as if it's like studying law or American law, let's say, or American jurisprudence, and not mentioning the Constitution. It just seems so out there. I can understand not having an emphasis on it, or there being a kind of, you know, de-emphasis on them, perhaps, or a shared emphasis with other principles, but to not mention it just seems, I can't quite see it.
Well, I think he was of the mind to let it grow out of the practice. And that would be the healthiest way and the deepest way that it would be absorbed through your experience in the Sangha. I studied with a Korean teacher very briefly years ago. And he was asked one time, what is Sangha? And he said, Sangha, huh? He said, you take dirty potatoes and you put it in a sieve. And you want to clean it. And you put the sieve under hot water. And you shake the sieve under the hot water. And he said, you don't clean the potatoes. The potatoes clean each other. He said, that's Sangha. Mm-hmm. So Koban allowed Sangha, which is one of the triple treasures, to do a lot of the work. We could see what was going on and feel what was going on and converse and learn that way. And that's a very powerful way to learn precepts, by actual experience.
Explaining it that way, I can
excuse me?
If you frame it that way, I can see how it might offer.
Well, you have to understand this practice is not about words and concepts. That's where we go wrong. We sit down with a book and read it and get that. But that's an ego achievement. Here we're sitting in silence. We walk in silence. And the Dharma and the sutra is very clear. No ears, no eyes, no nose. Go to essentials.
Well, we don't have a Saturday sit here in September. It's going to be up at Jikoji on the 15th. You're welcome to come for the day if you aren't signed up for Sesshin. And on the 21st, there will be taking the precept ceremony. Judy's going to receive her rakasu that she sewed and receive jukai. So it's always very touching, jukai ceremony. You take the precepts along with you.
Jokoji.
That will be up at Jokoji. At, I believe, 2 in the afternoon. But we'll be sending out a schedule for the session, and that will be the last event. Yes, Leslie.
Can we just add to that?
Of course.
Angie, on the 21st. And I don't have the exact time, but it will be in the schedule. Is going to give a talk about taking precepts and Jukai. So if anybody's interested, that will be part of the end of the session.
So we're ending with the beginning?
It's perfect.
Yeah.
I have an announcement. I have to do this session, but since there's no sit in August, in September, you're all welcome to come up to Jokoji this Saturday for a one-day retreat of sorts called Zazen Kai. It's led by Doug Jacobson, and it's a full day of intensive practice beginning at, believe it or not, 5:45 in the morning. We'll start with a walk up to the ridge top, and for Zazen at the ridge top, help the sun come up, as we say up there, and then back down for breakfast, and then a full day of alternating sitting, walking, meditation, and there's a Dharma discussion in the afternoon, so it runs basically all day long.
Is Eric and Kopo going to be there?
Sorry?
Eric and Kopo, are they going to be there in the afternoon?
Well, Kopo isn't going to be there.
Well, I thought she was everywhere.
Well, Kopo is everywhere, yeah. She's always with us. She is here right now. Kopo, this is Kopo the gorilla. She passed away.
Passed away.
Eric was a good friend of hers. Eric will probably be there, actually, yes. It's kind of co-led by Devin and Eric. But you're all welcome to come up there for that. Since you can't come here in September.
Nico, can we come for parts
of
the day?
Oh, yes, absolutely. But thank you for asking that. But any part of the day. The original Zazen Kai program ran from 9 to roughly 5, so we kind of backed it off to the morning and to take advantage of, you know, the environment that we're in up there. But at any point of the day you can come or go, so it's a nice day. And it's getting a little cooler up there, it seems. I mean, there can still be a scorcher, but lately it's been quite nice up there. Cool mornings, warm afternoons.
Do you want to let anyone know that were our intentions?
It's also a good question. Formally, no. It's nice to know, but we haven't done any kind of registration for that. It's obviously free, although your generosity and donations are always appreciated. No, you can just show up. There are two meals, so it's kind of like, it's all based on, there's no registration fee or need to actually register. Although the latter, we might play around with a registration, just so that people can give an intention so that we know, you know, at 6:00 in the morning, probably no one else is coming. But Ross and I talked about this on Sunday. In any case, I don't want to go on, but you're all welcome to come, so please do if you're so inclined.
Okay, 1 minute, 6.